Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Yonder stands little Maggie with a dram glass in her hands. She's drinking away her troubles and courting some other man.
From newsounds.org, it's another remote edition of the Soundcheck podcast. I'm John Schaefer. Sam Amidon is one of America's most distinctive folk singers. He grew up in the New England folk tradition, fell in with the new music crowd, moved to Old England, and has made very old songs sound very new, while occasionally writing new songs that sound very old. His latest album is a collection of favorite folk songs in really inventive arrangements, some of which include close friends like the multi-instrumentalists Shahzad Ismaili and Chris Vadalaro, as well as his wife, the renowned English singer Beth Orton. Today, Sam joins us from London with Chris Vadalaro to play a few songs for us. This first one is called Cuckoo Bird.
One, two, three, four.
Well, that is a live performance in London from our old friend Sam Amidon, and a song called Cuckoo Bird. Sam, great to see you again.
Wonderful to be back here. Thank you, John.
Of course, I use the word "see" in quotations.
Absolutely.
I was about halfway through that song on the record before I realized, oh, I know this song, but not under that name. I know it as Jack of Diamonds.
Totally. Well, it's one of those, one of the things I love about the universe of traditional folk songs is these kind of floating verses that seem to move through songs.
That's right.
And that whole Jack of Diamonds, I know you from old, you know, you've spent all my money and the I bet you $5. It's one of those verses that seems to kind of float through the and sort of arrive into the different songs.
Yeah. I mean, there are parts of Maggie, the leadoff single from the new album, that appear in lots of other folk songs too. Yeah,
for sure.
Really interesting how that happens. So you are not alone in that performance there. Chris Vadillaro, who's all over this new record.
Yes.
Helping out. He plays mostly drums on the record, right?
Yeah, and he's playing percussion here as well and a couple other bits he might have thrown. He has an amazing chameleon-like. So, and Chris has been my main touring buddy. He used to play in Antibalas many years ago.
Oh,
and he played with the great, Fela Kuti drummer, Tony Allen.
Tony Allen, sure.
And play with him a lot. And so there's a little bit of that spirit in Chris's playing, many other elements as well.
Well, now the album is simply called Sam Amidon. And when an artist who's had a, you know, career of some length puts out a record with his or her name as the name of the record, you expect that there's some kind of a statement being made there, a statement of identity in these songs. So what's going on here with these songs?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I feel like you can cash those chips in once and I hadn't done it. So I did it here, but I did feel, you know, when you're making a record, you're kind of keeping a little ear out in your mind's ear out for just a phrase that might jump out to be what the album is. And none was doing that. And at the same time as that fact, it just felt like there was a sort of combination of things coming together on this album. One was that I was sort of relaxing into some songs that I've just loved for many, many years. So instead of worrying about whether I was doing a really obscure song and some of the songs here are fairly obscure and some are totally classic, but instead of worrying about that, I was just singing songs that many of which I've loved for many years and that give me a lot of comfort and maybe I've heard my parents sing or, you know, different people over the years. And at the same time, it felt like this album was an album where the various different elements on my earlier records were sort of all getting folded into a more unified space. Mm. And in a way that maybe on earlier records, there's sort of clear, different, distinct elements you can hear, you know, being combined. Whereas on this one, they were all sort of fusing together. And that's what kind of made me feel good about calling it Sam Amidon, calling it by my name, which was to sort of, you know, these are the musicians and my, you know, Beth and Shahzad, these various people that have been close to me that are come together on this. And then the music is just sort of flowing. And it's the first album where I haven't had an external producer. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously the artist is always involved in the production, but it was the first time where it was really just me and the musicians. Obviously Leo Abrahams, his mixing job is quite creative as well.
And how much of this album was kind of done live in the studio?
It was very live. It was possibly more live than it in a way that it sounds in the sense. And one thing that was satisfying about it was that element where, like on Light Rain Blues, which is the Taj Mahal,
yes.
Taj Mahal song. And it was, I love Taj Mahal, of course. And I would never have dared to cover Light Rain beforehand because he just nails it on that track. And yet here on the Light Rain, the track on the record, that's one take with no overdubs.
Light Rain, baby, falling down. Light rain, baby, falling down. Soon as it hits my window pane, sure enough, hits the ground.
It's one of several kind of spacey, trippy arrangements on this album. Yeah. And interesting to hear that that was not, in fact, the result of lots of late nights.
Carefully sculpted. Yeah. No, it was one. It was just one take, and us all grinning at each other and smiling, and you know, just really cut. And I would say about 2/3 of the record is from 2 days of band session, and very, you know, again, not to the credit of, in terms of the subtle editing and production and or mixing is important, but you know, you're really hearing what was happening in the room. And then other tracks that we built up a bit more, you know, on, but some of this, but yeah, it was quite very much done quite live, you know, in a live way.
Well, now that Taj Mahal track is probably the only track on the album to which we can affix an author. You know, everything else is old and traditional.
Yeah, they're folk songs.
And you mentioned, you know, your parents learning songs from them. Your parents were sort of the rock stars of the folk scene up in New England.
Vermont. Yes.
The word of mouth chorus recorded on the old Nonesuch Explorer series back in the 70s. And
absolutely.
To this day, when we have Vermont musicians come in, you know, if the name Amadon comes up, with all due respect, Sam, it usually ain't you.
Yeah, no. They're legends. They are legends. And there's a great record of theirs called that they were part of, mm-hmm. called Sharon Mountain Harmony, and it's with Lucy Simpson, who is a really wonderful, from Brooklyn originally, really wonderful. She went around collecting old hymns. And it's a Golden Ring of Gospel. It's a folk legacy record called Sharon Mountain Harmony. It's my parents and Lucy Simpson and a few other musicians. And Time Has Made a Change comes from that, which is on my album, comes from that record.
Well, I wanted to ask you, and the reason I brought your parents up was Hallelujah, is you singing, which is sort of antithetical to the whole shape note group singing thing, has a very clear kind of shape note / Southern harmony sound. Is that in fact a song you would have learned from your folks?
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. Hallelujah is one of the classic songs from the shape note tradition. It's also, people also know that tradition as Sacred Harp, right? Because Sacred Harp is one of the names of the hymnals.
As is Southern and Harmony, course, yes. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And there's a few hymnals that sort of stayed in print, and Southern Harmony is one. Sacred Harp is one. Of course, the Sacred Harp being the voice, that's the idea, uh-huh. that a cappella, you know, four part harmony sound. And Hallelujah is just one of the classic anthems of that tradition. And it's one of the songs, usually I think you sing it towards the end of the sing, you know, you're sort of, you've been there with your friends, you've been singing all afternoon, you sing that one, it just always feels good. So again, it's one of the songs that just is in my, you know, bones so much. And the thing with those Sacred Harp songs is the melodies are so beautiful, and the harmonies of Sacred Harp music are also so powerful. But there's a sort of sense in which, you know, it's been fun for me on a couple times on my different records to just extract, you know, some of those melodies and take them away from the sonic environment of the Sacred Harp drone wall of sound thing, which obviously I love, but you know, to take it into a bit more gentle space and reharmonize it a bit. So yeah, but I mean, that, you know, if anybody listening has not heard the shape note music, I urge you to go, you know, on YouTube or listen to the Word of Mouth Chorus record Rivers of Delight, or just go search, you know, Sacred Harp on YouTube and see what you find, to see the true raw harmony, you know, sound. It's so powerful.
All right, so we're going to hear you doing Hallelujah now. What is Chris going to play on this song?
I think he's playing a little bit of bass.
Okay. Let's hear another performance. It's Sam Amadon. The album, called simply Sam Amadon, comes out tomorrow on the Nonesuch label. And Sam's in London with Chris Vadillaro. Here's their performance of Hallelujah.
Fell and let it faint or die. My soul shall quit this mournful veil and soar to worlds on high. And will sing hallelujah, and we'll all sing hallelujah when we arrive at home. Give joy or grief, give ease or pain, take life or friends away. But let me find them all again in that eternal day. And I'll sing hallelujah, and you'll sing hallelujah, and we'll all sing hallelujah when we arrive at home. And I'll sing hallelujah, and you'll sing hallelujah, and we'll all sing hallelujah when we arrive at home.
That is Sam Amidon with Chris Vadalaro in London, and a live performance of Hallelujah, a song from the old Shape Note hymnody here in the States, which I guess kind of started in, these days it's sort of associated with the South, but it really did begin in New England, right?
Absolutely. It's a very interesting thing. It was a New England tradition, and it kind of grew out of the... It was sort of a bit subversive at first because it was in the Puritan era of New England. Harmony, the music in the church was quite boring and did not have harmony because harmony felt good and was viewed as therefore
right,
suspect.
Right.
And so meanwhile, the younger people in these communities would walk by the pub and they would see the drunks who had been kicked out of society singing these old pirate songs and drinking songs. Like Captain Kidd. My name is Captain Kidd, as I sail. And it's, a million verses about him, being a pirate. And they would never dare to sing that song, but they secretly kind of wanted to. So what they did was they took the melodies of songs like Captain Kidd, and they found beautiful religious poetry by people like Isaac Watts and Charles Wesley. And they would take these spiritual words and attach them to the drinking song almost as a way to get away with singing it. So they changed Captain Kidd to Wondrous Love. What wondrous love is this, oh my soul, what wondrous love is this, oh my soul. And then they harmonized it on the top and the bottom, originally three-part harmony, eventually four. But what's so cool about that was they had no European musical training. So the music was totally full of these raw open fifths. And it doesn't sound like anything until drone minimalism,
right,
of the 60s or Kurt Cobain or something. And so then it sort of was pushed out of New England, I think partially because schooled musicians were like, this is, redneck stuff. We want the true European sound.
Right.
And it moved west, but it also moved west and south with the agricultural, stuff. And it continued in Alabama and Georgia in a real strong Baptist tradition. But even there, it wasn't done. It's always a social tradition. It's been done, on the Saturday and the afternoon as a picnic.
And it's
so it's cool because it's a real North-South connection in terms of traditional music.
And it's interesting because you could, and correct me if I'm wrong, but this is my understanding, you could affix different texts to different melodies. And so,
Yes, that's totally true. They have a weird little note at the top where it tells you what meter it is.
Yeah.
And you can mix and match.
Right. And, the idea of turning a drinking song into something else,
the national anthem, the Star Spangled Banner, is an old English drinking song.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes, it's called To Anacreon in Heaven.
Amazing.
But we know it as the Star Spangled Banner.
That's cool.
So Sam Amadon with us from home in London. And how have you been during this whole pandemic there?
You know, chugging as long as best all of us musicians can. I've been, you know, I've done the Patreon, which has been quite cool to connect with with listeners in that way. And, you know, and I'm just, we're all just hunkering down, you know, and powering through as best we can. You know, it's a difficult time for so many. I did a small socially distanced album release concert, pre-release concert in London a few weeks back, and King's Place did a beautiful job, and it was a window within which we could do that. Felt great to play music with other human beings. My wife Beth and I did a concert, Beth Orton, and it was for her so it was quite collaborative, although it was probably more her songs. We did a show in a little boat out in the North Norfolk Sea. And the audience, there was only 20 people and they were each in little boats. Wow. So, you know, it's a time of great creativity as well, I suppose.
Wow, yeah. Speaking of creativity, I alluded before to the fact that there are a number of tracks on this record that they're old songs with a very kind of psychedelic, twisty new sound. A song like Reuben, for example, which it almost sounds like you're hearing it through a kind of psychedelic haze of memory. Is that, I mean, you know, I'm trying.
Sure. Yeah. I love that. Yeah. I mean, you know, that is part of that was, there's a sort of certain sound that has sort of come again with these musicians, especially Chris Vardalaro, Shahzada Smiley, through playing concerts over the last 6 or 7 years with these guys in different contexts, which I don't feel has quite had a chance to, you know, to be on an album. So this record is really one of the time that I think everybody was able to fully, you know, bring those elements. And that Reuben song, the banjo tuning and the tune comes from an incredible compilation called Black Banjo Songsters, which is a collection of black banjo players from the 50s and 60s. And it's a really amazing record. And it's very cool to check out because, you know, and obviously in our society, we're sort of changing this perception, but there's been such a cliche about sort of blues versus old time music. And you sort of think of blues as being played in the guitar and they sing the blues and it's Robert Johnson, and then hillbilly old time music is banjo and it sounds like bluegrass or whatever. And whereas this Black Banjo Songsters, you hear these guys who are playing clawhammer banjo, you know, it's the same technique of banjo as you'd play for old time tunes, but the singing is on the top is pure blues.
Georgie Buck is dead, the last words he said, don't put no shortening in my breath. Georgie Buck is dead, and the last words he said, don't put no shortening in my breath.
And of course I'm singing it in my own way, but yeah, there is something about memory there and it's, you know, I think of my albums as sort of an imagined space. It's almost like a fantasy world that I'm creating where this is the kind of music, this is like a style of music. And there was a beautiful quote from Mark Rebo I read many years ago in an interview with him where it was about his solo album Saints, which is one of my favorite records of all time. And he says, when you make an album, you're kind of imagining a musical, you're imagining a fantasy musical history where that's the lineage of musicians. And his, I think he said that for Saints, it was something like Albert Eiler, Daniel Johnston, and, you know, and Big Bill Brunzi or something.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I've always thought about that, you know, in music, when I make my records, that Mark Rebo quote. And I'm not sure exactly who the names would be for this one, but yeah, I think about it when I make the music.
Well, having talked a bit about, you know, all the other people involved and all the different sounds and stuff, We're going to give Chris a break for this next performance, and you're just going to play Pretty Polly.
I'll play this one solo, yeah.
Now, this is one of the great, awful murder ballads in the American folk tradition. So,
yeah.
You know, how did you grow up with this song? Whose version did you first hear?
I did grow up with an array of these different kinds of murder ballads. I must have heard this one when I was a kid. The version that I really was struck by that I heard as a young teenager was E.C. Ball, who was one of the great folk musicians. E.C. and Orna was his wife. And he's very similar in style to Doc Watson. He played with a flat pick and on acoustic guitar and similar generation. But somebody I actually heard a lot more than I didn't hear Doc Watson as much until later. You know, I love Doc Watson, but he's a master. But my parents really loved E.C. Ball. He had this very understated way of singing and a beautiful flat picking style on the guitar. And he sang this song. Of course, you know, it's such a dark song and murder ballad. He had this very gentle way of singing it that didn't, that was sort of, it was just this very gentle voice he had to tell this terrible tale. And it gave it this sort of, you know, he was just bearing witness to these events. Mm. I think these, all these different murder ballads, I mean, they're very dark and in some ways potentially problematic, I think, but at the same time, you know, I feel like these traditional folk songs are sort of a window into the unconscious of our world and a window into the unconscious of America and of our society and of our various souls. And some on the surface, they can be, you know, they're like, why do you sing these, you know, dark songs or whatever? But which would be a question you could, of course, ask of any films or books. But within the details of, I think the key is in the details of these songs. And within the different, you know, I sing a few different ones. There's Wild Bill Jones, which is very much a first person. He's kills another guy over jealousy. Or The Two Sisters, which is, of course, this wild tale of the one sister kills the other, and then the body is eventually made into a violin that sings the story.
Or a harp.
It's sometimes a harp. Yeah. Totally. And so in Pretty Polly, for me, it's the pure objectiveness of the narration. You know, it's not like from the murderer's perspective. It's just bearing witness, like a news report almost, mm-hmm. to this terrible act. And then there's so many details along the way that are so compelling and just bring this awful thing to life. So I think they have their place in terms of that connection to the deep unconscious.
All right. Well, let's hear the song. Sam Amidon has joined us from home in London. His album, also called Sam Amidon, is out tomorrow. This song will be on it in a very different arrangement. This is Sam solo with Pretty Polly.
Pretty Polly, come go along with me. Pretty Polly, come go along with me. Before we get married, some pleasure to see. She got up behind him, and away they did ride. Got up behind him, and away they did ride. Over the hills, through the valley so wide. So deep, rode through the mountains and valleys so deep. Pretty Polly, she began to weep. Oh Willie, oh Willie, am I feared of your ways? Willie, oh Willie, I'm afeard of your ways. Your mind is to ramble and astray. Pretty Polly, you're guessing about right. Pretty Polly, you're guessing about right. I dug all your grave 2/3 of last night. Further, and what did they spy? Got up a little further, and what did they spy? A newly dug grave and a spade lying by. He stabbed her through the heart. Her heart's blood, it did flow. Stabbed her through the heart. Her heart's blood, it did flow. Into the grave, Pretty Polly did go. He threw something over and turned to go home. Threw something over and turned to go home, leaving nothing behind but Pretty Polly to moan.
That is Sam Amidon, solo, live in London with Pretty Polly, the old American murder ballad. And Sam, really a very, I mean, it's such a raw song that to hear it played solo is never a bad thing.
Yes.
But after, you know, a couple of dozen different solo arrangements, versions, it's nice to hear what's on the record too, which is, you know, the kind of the painting and all the sonic painting of these little details, which kind of correspond to what you were saying before, you know, some of the narrative details in the story.
Absolutely. Thank you. Yeah. And I had a bit of Sam Gendel on there, on the studio recording. You'll hear bits of Sam Gendel playing saxophone. And again, he has such a window into what's going on into music. And he brought a beautiful element to that, to the story of the studio version. But I wanted to do it solo here for you, because my guitar part is not so present in the recorded version.
They rode over mountains and valleys so deep. Polly, she began to weep.
That I was very proud of that little dadgad riff, so I wanted to get that solo version in there for the sound check listeners.
Okay, and for listeners who don't know what dadgad is, it's simply the tuning of the six strings, D-A-D, G-A-D.
Yeah, open D tuning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Largely supplanted by dad fad these days, it seems, with the F sharp, so that it truly is a D major chord when you strum it.
Yeah.
But
yeah, the dadgad is a more a modal thing, which is used a lot, but backing up Irish fiddle tunes.
Right.
And I really love, for me, that when I came up with that part, it was sort of in tribute to somebody like John Martin or, you know,
great English guitarist,
some of those English folkies.
Yeah.
Martin Carthy.
So, I mean, a final question to come back to almost my first question, which is the album is pretty much a statement of the music you love, the music that's been close to you, that's been formative for you. Was that something, it almost sounds like that was not the intention, but something that you found along the way?
I think that's absolutely true. Yeah, it really grew with the music. And I did this tribute to Harry Smith anthology in Belgium at the Ancien Belgique and made a little EP connected to that. And that sort of spurred me back to some of these more classic songs like Cuckoo or Little Maggie that I hadn't really gone to before. And I didn't expect that I necessarily would sing those, but they, again, they sort of came to life when I sang them. And yeah, it did, so that personal quality of it did emerge in terms of, I think that I'm always, my conscious mind is always thinking more about like, who am I going to have play on the record? And in terms of the content, it tends to be more subconscious, I think. Mm. And it, you know, because it always has to be deeply organic in terms of whatever feels good to sing at that moment.
Right.
And I don't really think about that from any kind of conceptual perspective beforehand. So I think it was something that sort of emerged personally. And for whatever reason, here we are this year, those are the songs that I needed to sing.
Well, Sam, I'm delighted that you're keeping busy, and it's always great to have you with us on the show, even at a remove like this. And
thanks so much for having me, John. It's beautiful to be here again.
Thanks, Sam.
Cheers.
No, sir, no, sir, no, sir, no, sir, no.
That'll do it for this soundcheck session. Our technical director is Irene Trudell. Our producer is Karen Havlick. I'm John Schaefer. See you next time.
Yes, I know I have no mother. Should father not return from sea? Then you see I have a brother who would take good care of me. No, sir.